So for me in the role, it was interesting that at one level I was endeavouring to improve the practice within the Willow Court Centre itself in terms of training, in terms of the new structure, in terms of supporting people who had some modern thinking and modern approaches. But the other half of my role was about shutting the place down. So it was difficult to manage the expectations and the promotion and development of staff who were still working within the institution. At the same time, your actions were saying institutions are outdated and we're moving away from this model. So that presented a bit of a challenge too. Like the places I had worked in Adelaide, there were clients who were full of vim and vigour and lots of individual personalities, just as much as there were with the staff. When, as you would coming from another place to Willow Court, you'd draw comparisons to what you've been used to and now what you're working within in Willow Court. One of the things that struck me was the proximity of Willow Court to the main street in New Norfolk, literally two streets away. The institution I worked at in Adelaide was much more modern and contemporary, as I've mentioned, but was based 20 odd kilometres away from the city centre and was surrounded by other government instrumentalities such as the men's prison, the women's prison, medical and veterinary science areas and that kind of stuff. But here we had an institution that the buildings were certainly outdated, a lot of the practices were outdated somewhat, but it was right there, one street away from the town. And to see clients who were able to be able to exit the campus at will, wander up and down the streets and be known and waved to and acknowledged as part of that community was just an amazingly positive experience to be a part of. Later on, I guess I found that the acceptance / tolerance of that community did have its limitations. So when we were going through the process of downsizing the institution, one of the first groups of clients that we moved out were a group of four elderly women from Olga House, and we moved them to a house on, I think it was about 3 acres of land, just outside of New Norfolk. And what we ended up with was a massive resistance from that community. So we had street meetings with politicians and media coverage that was all full of emotive commentary about, you know, you're exposing my children to seeing these people in their own backyards and how inappropriate that was. We also had some public gallery meetings with the local council, and at least one senior councillor of the day said that this deinstitutionalisation will happen over my dead body. So there were significant portions of resistance from a community that, in my opinion, owed its existence to probably the paper mill and Royal Derwent Willow Court historically. I was fascinated by the history of the place, and you've probably read the books that were produced around the history and its name changes and all the rest of it. And in the short period that I was there, it was interesting to even see some parallels from history. So the early days of the institution, there were stories about people coming and raiding the water supply because the first water pump was on the site of the Royal Derwent Willow Court campus. And in the time I was there, we discovered that there were people who had hobby farms around the area who had tapped into the water supply for the institution and were draining water off willy-nilly. So where else do I want to go? I guess we had some significant projects around infrastructure. So I think the building that was originally called Myrtle became Altaringa. That building underwent significant redevelopment, and that's one of the reasons that we ended up decanting one group of clients into Ward 5 on the Royal Derwent side of the campus, and that certainly led to one of the most challenging periods in my time at Willow Court. So the story basically starts with a very well-respected, lovable, gentle man who had worked at the institution for a number of years. And my recollection is that he had had some hip problems and recently had some hip surgery, and he requested to come back to work on light duties. So we placed him on night duty in Ward 5 in an area that meant that it would be physically less draining on him on his return to work. I showed up for work one morning to be told that the gentleman had an accident at work So we immediately wanted to make sure his welfare was taken care of and get all of the details and reports that are required. But it emerged from that that the claim had been made that he had been forced against a wall by a ghostly spirit in Ward 5. And I still today talk to people about how challenging this event was, because it's not something that you can learn from a training manual. Any course in management or leadership is not going to prepare anyone for how do you deal with the claim of a ghost injuring one of your staff. And there were frantic phone calls from me to my statewide manager, Mark Francis, and to other people in the department about how do we manage this situation. So clearly we'd looked after the staff member. He was receiving medical care that was required. But we had a whole furor amongst staff. We had staff refusing to go and work in Ward 5 because it was occupied by at least a ghost. We had non-believers who were ridiculing the believers. We had a whole bunch of staff who were in the middle who weren't sure whether to believe or not, but didn't want to say they didn't believe just in case there was something in it. It literally took off globally. So my phone started ringing from every media outlet you could name in Australia, and it just did not stop ringing. I had a secretary as part of the team, and her phone was ringing off the hook as well. One of the ways that we managed all of that tension around those first couple of days and all the demands from externals was to inject a little bit of humour. So my secretary loved Ray Martin, and we put up a whiteboard saying, if Ray Martin rings, then make sure we put him through to the secretary, because she wanted to chat him up. I was quite happy to take some of the female journalists of the day. So we had my name next to them on the whiteboard, and some of my assistants also picked the people they wouldn't mind chatting to. We had contact from media outlets in New Zealand, and we even had a request for a telephone interview at 4 o'clock in the morning with CNN from the USA. So it became global news instantly. It was amazing.
Before social media.
That's well before social media, and yet it still took off. We had a whole range of events, and I'm not sure if I'll get them in the right sequence, but within a short period of time, we had photographers with massive lenses in their cameras parked on the public street outside the campus trying to get photographs of people working and living in Ward 5. We had requests for people to come in and inspect the property and interview staff. We had a group of staff who were agitating to try and develop some evidence that there was a ghost spirit in the space. I, along with all of my senior staff, rostered ourselves onto night shift to work with the night staff and provide them with some direct support through the next probably week or so. And during that time, there were no further events whatsoever. Everything just ran smoothly. So partly my attention then was, how do I deal with the fact that we've got these three groups of staff, the strong believers, the strong non-believers, and the people in the middle wafting between one group and the other. And the tension that was creating between staff was actually quite palpable across the whole centre. It wasn't just the people in Ward 5. So we started off trying to develop an approach to this, and the only thing we could fall back on in terms of experience was to deal with it initially as a work health and safety issue. So if people were feeling stressed, we needed to provide an outlet, we needed to provide counselling and support for them, whether they were from the believing group, the non-believing group, or the middle group. And that was our first approach. So for the next day or two, it was all about making sure people were aware of the supports that were available. We got some people from our statewide human resource team to come and visit the site. The state manager came and made a visit. The secretary of the department came and made a visit to give words of reassurance and, you know, confidence. And I'm not even sure if the minister of the day may have even come up to pay a visit and try and dampen everything down. Unfortunately, that didn't work very well. It wasn't seen by a number of staff as being direct enough and active enough. So there was a lot of pressure for us to take this a bit further. Unions were getting involved and so on. So we had to say, we've got to look at this beyond just a work health and safety issue. We were pressured by some to have what they were calling an exorcism, to get some religious people to the site to scare away, move away the spirits, whatever it may be. And again, the non-believers were all just cacking themselves behind their hands saying, if you do this, you're just pointing out how stupid you all are. So we had this tension again, do we go down this path or not? And the critical part for me was when we had some of the clients who were living in Ward 5 who then came to speak to me about how it was impacting on them. That they couldn't sleep, they had insomnia, they were worried, they were scared, and they were just not dealing with it well. So again, we could provide some support for them, but that was the critical point for me that said, okay, if people want to ridicule me for getting some religious people in to perform a ceremony, but it helps the clients adjust to the situation better, then so be it. And so we did. We organised a ceremony. I think we had three of the senior religious figures in the state at the time. I learned that you don't perform an exorcism on a building, you perform a cleansing. An exorcism is a cleansing of a person. So we had a cleansing ceremony, and the three dignitaries came through, performed a function, and largely that did deflate the anxiety. People tended to revert then back to day-to-day activities, and the pressure was certainly released. So in the end, I think it was a good decision.